Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
If you want to win, you got to prepare and you've got to practice hard. You've got to let your coaches coach. These guys have got to have a comfort and a drive and a want to be here. Like when they wake up in the morning, they got to be excited to come into work because I'm going to allow them to do what they need to do to get their kids better. I think that's important. I think you surround yourself with good people, good things are going to happen.
And our guest this week, Jim Clements. He is the head football coach at Division II Kutztown University, former head coach at Delaware Valley University in Doylestown. He was a player at Widener. And Jim, thanks so much for taking the time.
Absolutely, Matt. Great to be here. Great to reconnect after many years at Widener and Del Valle, and excited to have this little podcast with you.
So the 2023 season was very special for you at Kutztown. You guys go to the Final Four, put together a tremendous run throughout the regular season and in the Division II playoffs. From your standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, who built it, how satisfying was the season?
Yeah, it was great. It was a they're all rememberable, right? Every season you ever coach, you can always go back and remember the great things and the things that you wish you could have changed. But this one was one for the ages, especially here at KU, to get 12 wins, which is the school record, to win the regional, which is the first time they've ever done that here at Kutztown. And we were so close in 21 to winning the region. We lost on a Hail Mary with 8 seconds to go to Shepherd, who we had beaten previously, and Tyson Badgett was the quarterback, the guy that's out playing for the Chicago Bears. So it was bittersweet to get this season and get that regional championship. It was awesome for the kids. And that's what it's about, right? The memories those guys are making. And they got a chance to go on an airplane, which was great. We had kids never been on an airplane before, so having that experience with them was just awesome. Yeah, and the season didn't start out the way you wanted to start out, for sure. We started out 0-2, you know, and a lot of guys would think that's, you know, it's not going to go well for you. You know, your playoff chances are really shot at that point. And, you know, we made it apparent to our guys that, you know, we just got to continue to get better and strive and work. And if we keep working and preparing, good things are going to happen for us. And we had some nail biters, but to win 12 in a row and to play 15 weeks in a row was really, it took a toll on our guys, and exhaustion and mental fatigue at times, but really give our players a ton of credit for coming to work every day and getting after it. But yeah, just an awesome year. We had really good players and a great staff, so it was awesome.
You mentioned the 0-2 start and then running off 12 straight. When during the season did you start to think, we are going to be a difficult out Like, you obviously knew they were good, and you obviously knew what you had in the room as far as personalities and leadership and stuff like that. But was there a moment when it crystallized that, all right, I really like how this is coming together, and if we stay healthy, look out?
Yeah, I mean, if you look back, and we had a couple nail biters to two teams that weren't that, you know, if you looked at their record, you would think, hey, these guys are, Kutztown should have rolled right over them, and that wasn't the case. We had to rely a little bit on our defense at times, offensively, and then there was plenty of games where we had to rely on our offense. I think when we could put all three phases of the game together, I knew after that Slippery Rock game for the championship, if we could continue to perform like that, we'd had a really good opportunity to go far. I think it was our most complete game as a unit all season, you know. So, and they were undefeated coming into that game, and they'd beaten everyone by, you know, it was always 45 to whatever, 10, or they were just rolling through their division. And so winning that game the way we did really was a jump start to our guys saying, hey, now they can't keep us out of the playoffs now, right? We've got two losses, but we're sitting in a pretty good spot at 9-2 and just beat one of the top teams in the region, and our power rankings had gone up, and felt real confident that we could, if we continued to play like that, we could get really far in this tournament. I always thought we were good enough to get to the NCAAs and to play for a PSAC championship. Even in camp, I felt our defense really took a step forward and grew from the previous year. Offensively, we had to fill some holes on the offensive line. We lost four starters on our offensive line going into this year. So I thought, you know, we always had that aspect of the team, the defensive team, and offensively, maybe take us a little bit of time to get the boys rolling. And I give a ton of credit to our offense coordinator, Marcel Quarterman, and our offensive line coach, Pat Taylor, did a fantastic job of getting those guys right and getting them on board. And to do it with a redshirt freshman quarterback as well speaks miles for the preparation that those guys put those kids through and the way they perform. But yeah, I would say that Slippery Rock game was the game.
You mentioned in 21 how close you were, and then it's the Hail Mary that beats you. How difficult is it as a coach? You put so much into this. You pour so much time, effort, heart, preparation, and the line between winning and losing is so, so fragile. Somebody gets a finger on that Hail Mary and knocks it away, or somebody hits a kick or misses a kick. It can come down to so little. How hard is that to accept as a coach? And I don't necessarily just mean that one individual moment, but just that concept that we can do all this and it could come down to a ball bouncing off somebody's helmet. Is it hard to kind of wrap your head around that sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah, especially when it doesn't go your way, Matt, right? Then it becomes extremely frustrating. But if you prepare your kids during the week and you constantly reiterate that these little things are going to matter when it all comes down to it, and our kids understand that every play matters, every possession matters. You know, if you're playing good football and you're playing it against good competition, which we face every week in our conference, the good teams tend to figure out a way to be on the right side of that. And there's all the championship teams that I've been a part of, as a coach or as a player, they always found a way to win the tough games. And I think that's where we had some resilience and were able to do that. But we also lost some games that, I mean, we were up 21 points in the fourth quarter to Cal and ended up losing that football game, which is extremely frustrating as a coach. You know, you go back and you revisit it. And if we did this, if we did that, if, like you said, you know, if our linebacker would have sank just a hair deeper in that cover two scheme, he could have broke up that touchdown pass. And it's a game of inches. It's a game of moments, angles, and speed. And that's what makes the game great. You know, and if you see it in the NFL every week, Matt, right? Like, it doesn't matter what the score is. It's going to always, usually when you're playing against two good teams, it's going to come down to the last couple possessions of the half of the end of the game. And if you can win those compartmentalized series, it's going to give you a huge advantage to win. And I think we've been able to do that in some situations. And we prepare that way as a staff and as a program during the week to make sure that we win those little games within the game, if you can say that. Right.
How long does it usually take you to completely process a season? Good, bad, playoffs, no playoffs, championship, no championship. Like, is it right away? Like, as soon as whenever it's over, Is it like a week or so to kind of, okay, this is where we are. This is what I like. This is what I didn't like. This is where we need to go forward. Or do you like to give yourself kind of a break as soon as the season's over and then come back to it with maybe, I don't know, fresh eyes is the right term, but, you know, with a little more of a deep breath behind it? Like, what's your process for kind of cataloging the previous season?
Yeah, I mean, our coordinators and our coaches will go back and watch things again, you know, when we're making up our cut-ups at the end of the year, just to see where we need to improve on or another direction that we feel our kids can go. I mean, you're going to graduate some players, so you got to figure out different ways to do things because you really base your system off of your players. So you can't, like right at the end of the season, you can't just scrap it and, all right, we're going to totally do something new. You got to evaluate the guys that you have coming back in the program again. To see where they're developing, because that's a continuation, right? That's a continual theme. These kids are getting better every year. Their skill sets are getting better. And, you know, what we can do with our guys at the present, I think matters more than at the end of the season, just, well, we were really bad at playing this coverage and we got to scrap that. Well, we don't, you know, we, there could be some guys within our program that can do it and be successful with it. But this was a long season, Matt. I mean, you know, like I said, 15 straight weeks. So, and we got done in December. We really just took a shower and got on the road and recruited. So it was for as a staff, I didn't have a chance to meet with my guys individually either at the end of the season. So we just really jumped on the road and tried to get caught up in the recruiting end before Christmas break. And we can go out and see kids in the schools and then kind of fast forward that, you know, throughout that process up until signing day. And then from there, it's like prepping for spring ball. And that's when you can go back and really take a harder look at some of the different run schemes or concepts that, you know, we would like to investigate and go forward here in the spring. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I look at it. I think it's important, again, to always, I mean, there's games I still haven't watched the whole game. We played 15 games and I still haven't sat down and watched every single play of that game. I usually do it the day after. If we play East Stroudsburg on a Saturday, that Sunday, I'm watching the whole game again, or Saturday night, you know, depending on the, it might just be one side of the ball, but I'll watch the whole game on that Sunday. And then I really just, we use it as teaching tools for the kids, right? Hey, this is what we did great. This is what we got to continue to do. This is where we need to get improvement on. And then we flush it, you know, and then we move on to the next team. So to go back and reevaluate the whole season again, it's a long process, but our coaches do it. Our coordinators do it, you know, and then they gather information on what, hey, this is now, what do you think about this going into the spring? I think we need to do a little bit more of this, or, you know, and then there's changes in the staff as well. So if you have some changes in the staff and, you know, how we're going to approach the next season, I would say the spring is an opportunity to really develop your players and see where they're at as skill set. And then we get more in the X's and O's and stuff as we're getting ready for camp.
So growing up, what's your earliest football memory? And were you playing football all the time, or were you playing all different sports as a kid?
Well, I played a lot of different sports growing up, football, basketball, baseball. Those were the three that I, you know, played as a kid all the way through high school. But football-wise, shoot, man, it was like kill the guy, right? That was the game. We would just be out in the, you know, grab a football and run around and play, you know, kill the guy, which was fun. My mom wouldn't let me play, Matt. So my mom was like, yeah, you're not playing football. You're going to get hurt. Like, Mom, I'm one of the bigger guys out there. You got to be kidding me. Like, I'm fine. Nope, you're not playing. So, you know, back then, I think I was 87, 86. I forged her signature on the physical form and started playing in seventh grade. And it was my mom, me, and my two sisters, right? They were both older than me. And she raised me and my sister. So she was always working. And it was kind of like a latchkey kid, right? You know, I'd get home. She'd either be home or not home from work yet. But regardless, I kind of pulled the wool over her eyes for a little bit there, especially in seventh grade. We didn't have like summer camp, right? It started when school started. So I was able to do that. And it was probably about the third week of the season when I saw my mom out of the corner of my eye. I was playing center and my buddy hits me like, oh, your mom's here. I'm like, no way. And I look and I'm like, oh shoot, there she is. I'm ready for her to come out on the field and just yank me off the field and give me an earful and kick me in my butt. But she ended up just going around and sitting in the stands. And at Jenkintown, where I played, Matt, you know Jenkintown, right? Single A, small school. You never left the field. So there wasn't a moment where I was on the sidelines and I had to like look up at her or anything. So I was constantly on the field. But after the game, she didn't rip into me. Like she didn't, I thought she would, but she's like, so you're playing this football here, huh? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, God, Mom, I love it. She's like, yeah, I can see that you love it. And I can see that you're not hateful at it. Maybe because I was pretty decent at it, but she supported me after that. Like she never missed a game, high school, junior high, college, even as a coach, she would be at all our games. So yeah, that was my earliest memory.
How did she get tipped off that you were playing? Had she come to the school for something else and happened to notice you, or did one of your sisters tip her off, or do you not know to this day?
No, I'm pretty sure my sister ratted me out, probably got in some type of argument about, you know, who's watching what on the TV, and that's it. Jimmy, I'm going to tell Mom. No, don't tell her. It ended up, and we had a small house. The walls were pretty thin, so she had her ways, I'm sure. Sure it was my sister.
When did you start to realize you were pretty good at football? Like it wasn't just fun, but that you mentioned you were one of the bigger kids. When did you start to put together that you were getting a little more attention than other kids?
I mean, to me, it was like just my coaches just would say, hey, you know, you got an ability here. You got to keep working at it. And I retained a lot of information well. And you know, I played offense and defensive line, right? So you kind of played both ways. So you got to learn each position. And I thought that made you a stronger offensive lineman and it made you a stronger defensive lineman. And to this day, I still look at that in regards to recruiting guys that do play on both sides of the ball. I think it's an advantage. Not as many coaches do it in high school. Back when we played, it seemed like everyone did, you know, played both ways. But yeah, my coach is kind of, you know, I played as a freshman on, you know, most kids did at Jenkintown, right? But I played early and, you know, and they just really, I mean, worked me hard and got me better. I mean, I love basketball too. I mean, and baseball was a really fun sport as well. I love them all. I played everything. And to me, it was like whatever I was in, whatever season I was in was like my focus. Like I wanted to be really good at it. And I liked the competitiveness of all the sports and the camaraderie with the players and the coaches. Like I said, like I was in a house of females, right? So I, you know, my brothers were my teammates and my, you know, and that's what I really enjoyed about sport in general and those team sports for sure. That's why I got into coaching, right?
Did the skill sets from playing baseball and basketball help you in football? And maybe you're not thinking of it at the time, but when you look back, like, oh, well, that probably helped with X, Y, and Z. Or was there anything you feel like that helped cross over and maybe help push you a little further along?
Yeah, I think basketball, just footwork and the ability to, you know, flip your hips, change direction when you're in the post or you're defending. It's a physical game, more physical than baseball. So, I mean, that part of it, you know, in the peripheral vision in all your sports, right? I mean, that's a big part of it in regards to being able to defend, seeing the ball and defending your player in the zone. And very similar to playing defense, right? You know, you got to get responsibility, but you better have, you know, eyes on all your other threats. And when those threats take you certain ways, you know, what's your next key? So eye discipline in all three sports is big, especially in baseball as well. You know, you have to have eye discipline on when you're up the bat and you're taking your bats to see where that pitcher's locating those pitches or how it's coming out of his hand. But yeah, eye-hand coordination, competitiveness, footwork. I think it's a good to be an overall athlete, use different body parts. It's only going to strengthen you down the road in regards to balance and your body presence and how you play on your feet. I think each sport can take you in a different direction, but by doing that, it's going to make you an overall better athlete, I think, to be good at all the sports. So that's something I look at as a coach when we're recruiting kids, like wrestlers. Wrestlers are usually really good linemen, you know, and tacklers. You know, they're used to the single leg, double leg takedown. They're good on their feet. They're balanced. They can play at different levels. And you talk about levels all the time when you're talking about your leverage as a football player, a horizontal, vertical leverage that trends in wrestling. And in lacrosse, they didn't have wrestling or lacrosse when I was at Jenkintown, right? So I played baseball. But I can see lacrosse really being good for a lot of your skill positions, you know, your start and go, your stops, your athleticism, the ability to make people miss in small places. So they all kind of work together and track and field. That's just purely a, you know, working on your speed, and speed kills in our sport in football. So that's definitely something. We have a couple guys here at KU that throw, that do shot and disc and jab. And we're okay with that. You know, to me, those are guys that will still get in the spring, but it enables them to have fun, right? While they're here at school and be competitive. but also get coached by somebody else, you know, have a different teammate and be able to make more of an impact. So, and all those things help. I truly believe they all help being a better player, and better teammate.
So when it comes to college, how do you end up at Widener?
My mom was taking night classes there to get her nursing home administrative degree. She was an English teacher, English her whole life. And then she changed professions midway through and got in a nursing home. And then to become an administrator, she had to get her degree at Widener at night. So she, you know, we were looking at some of the state schools. We were looking around back then too, Matt, it cost like $50 to send out an application. Like, and you had to fill it out online. There was no internet. You know what I mean? There wasn't any email or any of that stuff. So actually going through the process of applying to schools back then was a lot more difficult than it is now. At least it seemed that way for me at the time. So we were kind of limited, like, hey, you got like three or four of these schools, check it out. I didn't have the greatest grades coming out of high school. So I had a summer program at one or two schools and I wasn't so keen on that. And my mom's like, you need to just go check out Widener. You know, it's a great school. It's close. This was before the Blue Route was open. So he had to go a long way, you know. But Bill Manlove, I mean, he's a legend. Bill had won two national championships. He's in the Hall of Fame. Just unbelievable guy. So she drove me down there. I met with Coach Manlove. And it was later than the normal cycle. You know, it was probably, I want to say, April before Easter, and he took me in his car and just drove me around the campus and talked to me, got to know me, talked about, you know, the coaches and, you know, what he's done there and what Widener could do for me. And that was it, man. I was hook, line, and sinker. I was like, yeah, this is a good spot. I did an overnight and that was it. Sealed deal and was able to go down there. And we struggled our first year. I actually played both ways a little bit as a freshman at Widener. We were really good on defense and I was primarily a defensive tackle. And our offense wasn't very good. So there was a handful of us that played O-line too. So we would practice offense on Wednesday, defense on Tuesday, kind of split it on Thursday. The season didn't go that great for us. And then unfortunately, Bill left Widener and I got a whole new coaching staff. But yeah, Bill Manlove and my mom, probably the biggest reason I went to Widener. Mm-hmm. Was and Bill a chance Cuban? To play. Matt, I wanted to play, right? I never sat the bench, at, you know, just because necessity. Everyone had to play. And I was like, I'm not going to school. I wanted to go somewhere I knew I had a really good opportunity to get on the field and make an impact. Because, again, you didn't redshirt back then. At that level, you didn't. You weren't allowed to, right? So you had to play. So that was, I wanted to make sure I went somewhere where I knew I had a chance to play the game I loved and then get a great degree and be close to home.
Seeing that you did play both ways somewhat, I guess it wasn't a huge transition for you going from high school to college? Did it seem like, I mean, I'm sure it was, it felt like it was a higher level, but it doesn't feel like it was overwhelming.
I seem to have a pretty good handle for it. I mean, obviously you're playing against a lot better players, bigger human beings, but no, I was excited, man. I just loved playing. I was excited. I got to meet a bunch of new teammates. The older guys were great. We had a huge freshman class, but yeah, I was all about it. I was excited about it. I thought it was definitely a challenge. It's a little bit longer. You know, I was going to say it's a little bit longer of a game. It is a longer game, but when you play both ways all throughout high school, you kind of are in condition. So that was never an issue with us. Like, we're always in good condition. So coming to the camp, felt I was in really good condition. And I always preach that to our kids here at KU. Like, you better come into camp in shape. Because if you don't come into camp in shape, you're going to struggle. Right. You got to come in. You got to be ready to step on some feet, get after it, compete to play. Now, that was in my mindset. You know, I was going to go in there and play regardless, offense, defense line, wherever they needed me. And I was going to be the guy that they could count on. So that's kind of how it went, I think.
So you mentioned Coach Manlove after your freshman year isn't there anymore. What was that like? And it was Bill Cubitt that took over, correct? What's that transition like? How did life change for you? Was it, you know, how was it different?
Yeah, I wanted to try to play baseball at Widener too. And we didn't have like spring ball back then. So a lot of our guys would play a sport in the spring or just would get in the weight room and get better. And I was really contemplating on doing baseball as well. But then when we got a new coach, I said, nah, forget that. I want to be right in there. I don't want to you know, lose any, I don't want to lose out, get out of favor of anybody. Like, he's a baseball player. No, I'm a football player that played baseball. So when he came and addressed the team for the first time, it was different. He was different than Coach Manlove. He was coming from, I think he was coming from Akron at the time, but he had been already at University of Florida. He was all over the place. So, you know, it was really like, Harry, what do we need to do to impress the new guy and get to know him? And it really changed that much offensively. We did get a little bit more in depth in our passing game. And then Billy Swan was in that group too. And Billy was the DC. So I kind of, you know, Cubes was like, no one's playing both ways here, right? You got to pick one and then you're going to play defense. I said, thank God I'm playing defense. Let's go. And then Coach Swan was a player who, or a coach who you would, you'd run through the wall for Bill. He was really good at motivating us. He was really good at pushing us and really challenging us to be the best that we could be. And he and Cubes together were a really good coaching staff. And we turned it around pretty quickly. I think a lot of it had to do with recruiting too. I mean, you know, and we had graduated a ton of kids from that year, my freshman year, or they did the year before. So they were kind of in an imbalance in that season. But it took us two more years, I think in 93. Three, we ended up playing pretty decent. In 94, we won the league and we were really good. We got to the NCAA playoffs that year. So it was fun. I really enjoyed my time there. Really good coaching staffs, both with Coach Manlove and Coach Cubitt. A lot of memories, great teammates. Just, you know, it's college football, right? You have fun. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
From a football on the field standpoint, what are one or two of your favorite memories?
As a player, we played Wilkes. Wilkes, I think Wilkes was had won the league in 93, and we were at Wilkes in a big game, and we were coming out in the second half, and it was close. And I remember this series was like, hey, we got to get a stop this first series and get the ball back and open it up. And I had two sacks in a row. I had a sack on second and third down, which was big. I felt really good because I usually missed them, Matt. I was the king of missing sacks, man. I would have hated myself. If I was coaching me, I'd be really pissed. I missed a lot of sacks. And then my running mate, O.J. McElroy. O.J. was our DN. He's an All-American. So every time I missed a sack, he'd clean it up. And I think he had like 19 sacks his senior year. But that game was a really good game. And then maybe my freshman year of high school, right? We're playing Bristol. I think Bristol in the homecoming. And they throw a middle screen and I picked it off and I'm rushed about 60 yards. I'm down, I'm going, and I'm every one of my teammates is around me wanting me to pitch the ball. And I'm like, just why? If they would have damn blocked somebody, we would have scored. Instead, they're bitching about me pitching the ball. So I end up getting tackled on like the 1 yard line. And I just, that was the only time I ever could have had a shot to get a touchdown and I blew it. But they say two things, right? I was really a bad pass rushing defensive tackle. That's why I caught the middle screen. Most of the other guys were already up the field. But no, that was a good memory. And then they, you know, in the college memory. But yeah.
So when does coaching start to enter the equation? Was it something that you always figured you wanted football to stay in your life? And how's that first opportunity? Because you got your first opportunity at Widener, correct?
Yes. I always knew I wanted to coach. And I would have loved to coach basketball, baseball, football. I mean, I loved all three of those sports, but football is probably the one I was best at and really enjoyed the strategy of the game. And I really knew when I was a younger kid, right? Because I played sports my whole life. That was my favorite time of the day was practice, right? So, and my mom was like, if you're going to do something that you love. So I figured I'm going to go be a teacher and can get my history degree, secondary education, and I can go teach and then I can coach. Whatever sport they need a hand in, I'm going to coach. I'll do a good job at it. But I couldn't find a teaching job when I graduated. Now they're giving them away like Tic Tacs, man. I mean, everyone needs a teacher now. But back then, a social studies teacher in the early to mid-90s, there weren't many opportunities unless I moved out of state to Louisiana or whatnot. And I thought about it. There was a job opportunity at Mainland High School down in Florida, right outside Daytona. A pretty good football team. Mainland, I forget. I had an opportunity. Bill Cubitt helped me out with that. Said, you know, you might want to go down there and check it out. And I kind of got cold feet and didn't do it and had an opportunity to go back. And I coached at Jenkintown in 96. In 95, I was a student assistant, right? I had used all my eligibility up. I had to do my student teaching. So I was at Widener for an extra semester. So I would do my student teaching at Pepper Middle School in Southwest Philly, which isn't even open anymore. and then Interborough High School right there at Delco. And then I'd hustle back and coach the football, like help out with the guys that were my teammates and was helping out with the O-line. And that's when I knew, like, yeah, I really want to do this. I really like it. And Bill Cubitt and Billy Zwan both said to me at one point, they're like, you know, would you be interested in coaching? I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And Cubes is like, you know what, you'd be a pretty damn good coach. I think you should really, you know, try to pursue that. So I went and coached at Jenkintown in 96, and then I had an opportunity to go back to Widener as a graduate assistant. So I was getting my master's degree paid for, and I did that for about just right before 1 year, and right before my second year as a GA, there was a GA Mangus was on our staff, and GA left. And then that opened up a full-time spot, and Billy Zwan hired me, gave me a full-time job, which super thankful for to this day, because I was working when I wasn't full-time, Matt. I was delivering pizza. I was tending bar buckets. I was working on the golf course. I was painting. I was running the weight room. I had like 15 jobs, right? So to get a full-time job was pretty big. And then I stuck out there, and I had opportunities to move some other spots, but I always wanted to just be really good where I was at and was just trying to learn and get better. And we were really good. We went to the Final Four, Final Eight. We had some really great teams at Widener. So that was really fortunate to be a part of a winner. Like, I don't think as a player and as a coach, maybe I had one season that we weren't 500 over an X amount of years of, so I was fortunate. So that was awesome, getting that opportunity to coach at Widener where I was comfortable, you know, and, where Bill really let you coach a little bit. Now he chewed me out a little bit too. There was times where, you know, he got me a couple times, but that's another story, I'll tell you.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Kutztown University head football coach Jim Clements in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Kutztown University head football coach Jim Clements. What was the toughest part to learn about coaching? Because it's obviously almost comes natural to you, it seems like. But like once you are a coach as an assistant there, what was the hardest thing to get your arms around?
That's a good question. You know, because as a college coach, there's so many different hats you wear. You have the recruiting piece of it. You know, you've got to go out and sell the program, and you've got to, you know, really stay on top of those kids. And it's really sales in the early stages of it, where you got to go out and hustle and do all that stuff, which is exciting for me because I never did that before. But I got to go out and talk about football and talk about Widener and our program, which to me, it came easy. Maybe learning more about the different positions that I didn't have a lot of expertise in. You know, all right, well, what's the defensive back doing in this defense and why? You know, and always wanting to know what the why was. Why are we doing that? So learning it as you go, as any coach does, you know, you get better with reps, right? And you get better as time goes on. I think to this day, the hardest thing for me is when you have to, you know, we have a roster limit. So you got to make a cut. So I got to cut a kid. That's like the worst thing ever. I can't stand that. I don't want to. That's like the thing I really avoid to do. And if we do a good job, it usually works itself out anyway. But yeah, that piece of it, because you feel like, you know, coaching is all about building relationships, right? And getting to know these kids, and then they trust you, right? You trust them. That's part of it. That has to be where it all starts. The foundation of it has to be trust. That we're doing what's best for you, and he trusts that we're doing what's best for him to get him to be better, right? And then it gets to that point where you got to make a decision. You know, it's just not, there's other kids that are playing better than him at this point. And that can be difficult as a coach because you think like, well, shoot, you know, could I have done a better job to get him better? You know, could he have done a better job to get himself better? Or the other kids are just better, you know, and just pick it up better and are faster and better at it. So I think that's the biggest. The hardest thing for me as a young coach was trying to figure that out, right? because you want everyone to be really good.
So you're at Widener, and you mentioned G.A. Mangus was there, and then he left. He becomes the head coach at Del Valle, and then you eventually join his staff there. Was that, I mean, obviously you had familiarity with G.A. Were you looking, because you talked about having that comfort level, were you looking to push your comfort level a little, kind of challenge it, or does he call you and you're like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, well, when he left, I got, like I said, G left. He ended up going to, he was at Ursinus for a couple times when they were doing really good with Paul Gunther, turning that thing around. And I was at Widener. We've always were really good friends. So we talked quite a bit. And when he got the Del Valle job late in the game, he didn't get that job till late in the year. It was like June. There was a change on staff, and he and Bobby Chesney were the two full-time guys, and GA ended up getting the head job. And he wanted me to co then, but they had just hired Coach Chesney. So they kind of stayed together. And at the time, I liked coaching at Widener, right? And Billy, we were great. And Zwaner took the Westchester job after the 2002 season. And I was a guy, too, trying to tell him, hey, you ought to try to get that gig, that and a Delaware job. And he would have been a great choice at Delaware. But anyway, he ends up leaving. And he couldn't bring any of us with him because of the union, which I know all about now, Matt.
Right.
At the time, I was like, what do you mean? No. So I was like, all right, well, shoot. I'm going to apply. I'm going to try to get this job here at Widener. And our VP, Mike Mahoney, it's like, they thought I was, I didn't even get an interview. They thought I was too young. I think I was like, I don't know, 28 or something like that. They thought I was too young. So Dave Wood ended up getting a job, which was great because Dave and I worked together on the defense. And I was safe. Dave was going to keep me around as his D coordinator. So I was excited for Dave. I was excited to be a part of that. And really, at that time, GA was trying to get me, but I felt I owed it to Dave to give him that year, right? And to get that going. And I always thought maybe there was a chance that I would be able to run the defense. And Dave's a defensive guy. And shoot, we're beating Leval, Matt. I think it's like 70-7. So we're killing. And it's the second half. And I'm thinking, all right, well, maybe coach is going to let me call a series or two, and I can call one darn play. And that's when I knew. I'm like, you know, I got to get out of here. If I want to grow and get better at this, I got to go. And I had an opportunity to go up to Del Valle. So that was something that I jumped on and knew I was going to, GA wasn't going to bother me with any of the defense. He said, this is your deal. You run it how you see fit. This is what I kind of would like, which is similar to what we were doing. And then Coach Manlove was up there, which was another great resource. And I really started to grow. I think that was when I made my best transition. You know, that was a move I had to make to get myself better. And we were 24-2 in those 2 years. And they always could score points. They just couldn't stop many people defensively. And I think that's what I brought up there. We played really good defense and were able to have some really great years. So when he ended up leaving to go to Middle Tennessee State to be the OC, I had a really good opportunity to be the head coach at Del Valle. And the president brought me in and said, Jim, we want you to be the next head coach. I said, where do I sign? I didn't care what the heck they were going to pay me. I was just happy to have a job and happy to coach. There won a lot, but that was okay by me. I was just fired up about it. So, and that was my first big hire was hiring Duke Greco. Duke was a part-time running back coach in 2004 there. And then he won there in 05. He had to work. You don't make a lot of money part-time coaching, and
right,
to get him back with us. And, you know, that was a big hire for me.
So when you're coordinator and you talk about how you didn't get the chance to call the defense, even in a blowout, like when it comes to calling a game from a coordinator standpoint, more science or more art?
Yeah, I think it's a feel thing, right? So I would probably say, well, there's a lot of coaches that the analytics, you know, you kind of go in and say, all right, well, if we're in this situation, you know, these are the four calls that we like. But situations can change, right? Those four calls may have entailed certain guys on the field that aren't on the field anymore. So you got to be able to think on your feet. You got to be able to get a feel for the game, weather, you know, different scenarios. How much are we up? Are we chasing? You know, you're going to call the game different depending if you're chasing or if you're up or if it's even. So I think you go into the game with a scientific method, like this is what we want. This is what we think is going to put our kids in the best position to succeed. And then once the, you know, toe meets leather, now it becomes more of an art, like a feel thing. Like you got to get a feel for the game, got to get a feel for your opponent, because they all look the same on film. And then when you get there in a live game, it's totally different. Oh, those kids are bigger than they looked on film. Or, hey, that receiver's got is pretty freaking good. you know, we're going to have to bracket this kid, or we're going to have to change around some things of how we're going to call our third down, because this kid might not even have been on film. He might have been, hey, this is, he just got off an injury, you know, and he's back on the field and he's a problem, right? So you got to do a lot of in-game adjustments and stuff like that. So I think the art of it, I would say, I would probably lean that way.
See, to get the head job at Del Valle, did you know what you did not know when it came to being a head coach? Like, were there things that you were like, oh, okay, so I'm responsible for that, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was so not ready. No one is. I don't care what anyone says. No one's ever ready to be a head coach when it's your first time. No one. And you might think you do, right? There's no playbook that you have to follow. A lot of it's learning on the job, right? So like you said, there's things that pop up that you had to deal with, put a lot of fires out, find a different way to do things than maybe was done in the past. There may be a new admissions counselor that gets hired, and the standards of your admissions and your recruiting changes, or the type of kids that you're looking for, or financial aid, tuition just went up. How is this going to affect our recruiting? How are we going to make it affordable for families? You know, there's a lot outside of the X's and O's that go on. You got to make sure that your kids are becoming sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and you're not just working on your room. You know, you're not, as a defense coordinator, I had my defensive guys. You know, as a linebacker coach, I had my linebacker room. You know, as a head coach, you got them all, right? And the way I do it here and the way I treat my staff here is like, they're all ours, right? So like our D-line coach should be able to talk to all our O-line coaches or our O-linemen and vice versa. Like, so they're all our kids. And we all got to do a great job of making sure that they're taken care of. And so when that happens, there's a lot of different hats you have to wear as a head coach, you know, disciplinary, financial aid, admissions, chemistry, culture, you know, girlfriend problems, problems back, things that happen at home. You know, so I call that my grandma session, right? Where I have to sit down with some guys and, hey, let's talk about everything outside of football and academics. You know, how are you doing as a person? How are you feel? And again, that comes back to that trust part, right? Like, these kids have got to trust you and you have to trust them. So as a head coach, you got to have a lot of trust in your teammates and your staff. And I think that's probably, you know, the thing that you're not ready for, not the trust part, but just the, all, like you said, there's a lot of different things that pop up. Like, coach, we're short. We got to buy 10 more helmets. Oh, shoot. Well, we don't have the money in the budget. We'll figure it out. Like, we got to change some things. We've got to fundraise. I mean, fundraising, it's a huge part of what we do. And we don't have budgets like these FBS schools out there. So we've got a lot of different hats that we have to wear. And there's times where I love it. And then there's times where I'm like, I wouldn't mind just going to be a position coach and just let me work. Well, let me reset. Let me get these guys right. But in the end, it's, you know, to me, it's coaching, right? So I'm just happy to be coaching.
At what point when you started as a head coach at Del Valle, how long did it take you to feel like you understood, you had your arms around everything? Not that you had mastered it, because there's always something, and you know, you're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, but where you felt comfortable that every day you came in, you were going to be able to tackle whatever came on your plate. Was it right away, or did it take a season or two?
No, it took a little bit of time, you know, and then the plate could get full some days. So, I mean, the comfort part of it, I felt comfortable. You know, at first you try to do everything yourself. And maybe that was the thing you learned right away, is that, hey, you got to let your guys coach. You hire them to do that. Let them coach. Let them run the room, kind of give them a blueprint of what we're all about, and let them go work and do their job. So like micromanaging and things like that, that's something that some coaches are like that. I'm definitely not that person. There was a time though, I felt like I had to be, but you get more out of it. Like when I go back and say, well, when I was an assistant coach, how did I feel? Like with my, you know, head coach not giving me an opportunity to go out and do what I love to do, or, you know what I mean? Like put like a restrictions on you. So like, I always look back at like, well, as an assistant coach, how was I going to be the best I could be, is if the head coach gave me a lot of leeway, right? Let me go do my job. And, you know, if I needed something, I could go to my head coach and say, hey, coach, I think I need to get this done or that. And I want to be that head coach to say, yeah, go for it, man. Like, get it done. Let's get these guys great. Just try something new. I think you always constantly had to be growing and getting better as a coach, and you had to let your staff do that and grow. You know, to me, you know, that's probably the takeaway where I think it's important to surround yourself with good people that are all in it together. I think I'm talking around your question, Matt. I forget what the heck you asked me originally. I tend to go on a tangent, but
No, I think you got it. Like, as far as getting your arms around it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you never are going to get your arms around it. You never are. I've been a head coach since 2006. You know, I get news this weekend that comes out of left field. How I got to handle it on Monday? You know, what's the best way? What's the best approach to do it? So yeah, I mean, it's constantly learning on the job and hiring and new coaches, and coaches move on and go and move up in the world or go take other opportunities and other jobs, and trying to find the next guy that's going to come in and be the right fit. That's a big part. I mean, I had to do that more here at Kutztown than I ever did at Del Valle. So that's always a big part, the hiring phase, right? Finding the right people. Because you never know, man. It only takes one bad spoke in the wheel to kind of screw things up. And you don't want that to happen. And you got to try to do the best way you can to vet the right people. And if there are situations here to take care of, you know, and you need to sit someone down on your staff and talk to them about, you know, how I'd like to see it done, or how what we need to do to change. As long as they're receptive and they're going to work their tail off for us and get us better, then we're all going to grow. We're all going to get better.
Do you remember your first win as a head coach?
Yeah, we played FDU up at FDU. It was a close game. I think we ended up winning like 17-7 or 17-10. Again, offensively, we weren't lighting it up, but we were pretty good on defense. Mike Isgrove was my freshman quarterback, who's now the head coach at Del Valle, which is awesome because Mike is awesome. Great person. So yeah, that was FDU. Yep. And then here at KU, we beat IUP. Was the first win. We went out to Slippery Rock and they were like fifth in the country. And we were up at halftime and they came back and got us. But then we play IUP here. Kutztown never beat IUP, like ever. And we beat them 44-7. So that was a big win for the Golden Bear Nation. They figured, oh man, we're all right. We're going to be okay. Yeah, we're going to be all right. we'll be all right. You know,
you had a ton of success at Del Valle, playoffs, conference championships. Are there one or two memories football wise from Del Valle really stand out when you think back to your time there?
Oh man, there's so many. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's with the players and the relationships. It might not always happened on the field. Maybe it was just a celebration in the locker room or getting a new locker room. I remember that process. Just seeing the faces on all the kids when they're like, "Oh man, we got a brand new locker room," and Coach promised it when he got the job and he came through. That was important. I remember we played Kings up there, and I want to say it was my first year, 2006. And Kings was pretty good at the time. They were pretty good on defense. And it was pouring rain, like pouring rain. And they had a grass field at the time. So we're up there. It's a mud bowl. We had the old headsets, you know, with the wires connected still. So headsets getting ripped off my head every 5 seconds because people are stepping on it. There's no sideline control. We're all going, you know. I remember that being a muddy mess and Duke being nervous going in. We pull up on the bus. He's like, "Oh man, I'm like, Duke, we're just going to hand the ball off. We're going to hand the ball off and we're going to shut these guys down. We're just going to hand the ball off and eat it up." And Jake Sheffield from Interboro, I think he set a school record with carries that day. And we would have had like 48 carries for like 250 yards or whatever it was. And we had an opportunity to score on defense too. We were coming out of the red zone. And it was a mud bowl when A.J. Neal, really good hybrid outside linebacker for us, comes off the edge, and sacks the quarterback, the ball's rolling around. And I'm like, and he's dancing, doing a sack dance. And we could have scooped it and scored. I'm freaking out. He's looking at me. Ah. I'm like, no, get the ball. I remember that. That was a memory. We won that game. Yeah, we've had some really good ones. At 2005, we were playing Rowan in the regional final. And we had just played him in 04, two of my best defensive players, Dwayne Whetstone, was a corner for us, and Brandon Tolbert was my safety. And they were both all-conference MAC players. We lose the game at their place. The next year, we get them in 05 at our place, and both of those kids are starting for Rome. And they're both first-team all-NJAC players. And they had to leave to go to Rome because financially it was a lot more affordable for their family. They were New Jersey kids, and that really stunk watching those guys performing. And we had that game won. I mean, we had that game and we freaking gave up. I could tell you who screwed up, but I won't. There was a vertical number three receiver. We got caught between two and three, and they did a great job picking up a big first down. And if we get that stop, we win the game because we were really good in 05.
Mm-hmm.
We were really good. And they were too. We had a really good shot. We would have hosted Mount Union the next week, and I think we would have beat them. But our field was like an ice rink, right? So it was frozen. And then like midway through the first quarter, it starts to thaw out. And it's just slipping and sliding all over the place. We had another mud bowl against Lebanon Valley, or no, Juniana, at our place. And it was like, they weren't very good, but it didn't matter. Like, no one could move the ball at all. It was one of those deals where we kicked off the game twice, right? So we defer, they take the ball, we kick it off, we start the second half, we kick it off again. And that's how we end up scoring. We end up forcing a couple punts and finally got the ball close enough to score. I think we won like 10-7 in a game. We would have beat them on a dry field by like 28.
Right.
So those like crazy weather games, I tend to remember. But yeah, I mean, we've had some great ones up at Lycoming, man, some big weather games up there, mud bowls. Oh, man. Yeah, a lot of good memories, a lot of fun, a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas. But it was awesome. It was a great place, awesome place.
2014, you take over at Kutztown. What's the events that lead to you taking the job that you enjoy now? Was it the did you hear about the opportunity, or had you hit a point where you felt like you wanted to try something different?
Yeah, I was, there was two openings the previous year that I kind of got interested in. One was Millersville and one was Kutztown. And, I love Del Valle. Like, let's make sure that's aware. Like, that place was great, but it's expensive. And the whole financial aid piece of it and just the recruiting piece of it was, it becomes a grind after a while. And you kind of want to go in and help some families. And Kutztown, Millersville, the state schools are more affordable. They just are. So you can really, you know, that was a big part for me. But I remember interviewing at Millersville and I didn't get the job. They wanted to hire a D1 coach who was from like North Dakota, not state, North Dakota, maybe Coach Brybeck, who was in there. And so I didn't get that job. So I was really upset about that. Thought I could have done a good job there. We never lost to Millersville yet, Matt, just so you know. We're undefeated against Millersville, just so you understand that. I don't have sour grapes. And then I actually looked at Kutztown was open in the same year. And I knew I had a tougher job to get the KU job because I knew Drew Fulmer up for the job. And Drew was the offensive coordinator. And they wanted an 11. And they had a really good year. And Drew's offense was really good. So I figured, hey, they're probably going to keep it in-house. But I came up and I did the interview anyway, and I thought I did really good. And they ended up keeping it in-house with Coach Fulmer. And then he ended up leaving the very next year. So he ended up going to Lehigh to be an offensive coordinator. And the guys at Kutztown called me and said, hey, we really want you to get involved again. And I thought I didn't have to move. My wife and my kids, we all live in the same spot. So I didn't have to move the house. My wife kept it. Everything was fine. I was just driving in a different direction. So I like rolled the dice. And I couldn't bring anyone with me. I wanted to bring them all with me if I could, and I couldn't. I had to come in here blind. I knew some of the coaches on staff, but I really had to get to know them a lot better. I started 2 days before spring ball started. That was my first day on the job, right? So there was a lot of evaluation of players and coaches and just getting to know and getting a comfort feel. I think that was the biggest change. I just wasn't comfortable early. You know, you get buyer's remorse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, what did I get myself into here? You know, and then you just gotta, you know, hey, suck it up, dude. Like these kids need you, right? I need them. We're gonna get it right. And we've done a pretty good job.
When did you get past that? Like, when did you get past that buyer's remorse too? Okay, we're gonna be fine and we're gonna make this work.
I probably camped. The whole spring was a drain on me. And then I had to, then one of my full-time coaches that was here ended up leaving to go to Arkansas Tech with Coach Monica. So I ended up, I had to hire an offensive coordinator. It was late in the year and I couldn't hire Duke, right? So, and when you're at two schools for as long as I was, like my Rolodex wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of guys I could just pick up the phone and say, hey, come on up here. I need you to help me out here. So I interviewed a bunch of guys, all pretty decent candidates. I thought we were at the time of the year. It's tough to find someone at that time, but all the guys that I interviewed were all pretty good. And we ended up going with Coach Mangle, And one of the main reasons was because it was very similar offense to what they were running under Drew Fulmer. It's the same offense that Drew was the quarterback for Coach Mangle at Millersville. Mm-hmm. So a lot of similarities in the verbiage, and that was important to me. Like, I didn't want to have the kids have to learn a whole new system. Like, I want them to be comfortable. I want them to be going. So we hired Coach Mangle, and then a couple weeks into camp, I started feeling pretty good, and, you know, I felt more comfortable. You know, I felt real good after we beat IUP. and we had some close ones. We had some nail biters. And then I've had some changes on my staff since then. And it seems like we're just continuing to get better and better. And we just got to keep working.
Do you prefer practice or games?
That's a great question. Like, I like the games. I love the games. But I also love a good practice. Nothing beats a good practice. Like, when everything's rolling, everyone's working hard, and at the end of that practice, you're like, shoot, man, that was a great practice. Like, then you start feeling more comfortable about, all right, these kids are getting it. Like, we're going to have a really great shot on Saturday. We just got to string some of these great practices together. It's the same way coaches talk about stringing some wins together. Mm-hmm. Well, shoot, you ain't going to string any wins together unless you start stringing some great practices. And I think that's where it always starts. And I really enjoy a really good practice. But at the same point, I love the W. You know, I love to get the win. And there's sometimes, you know, to be all honest with you, you go into a game and it's those, like, I'd rather play like the best team in the country, like every Saturday. You know what I mean? Like, instead of, all right, because, you know, we should beat this team, or we haven't lost to this team, or this, they're the teams that are going to get you, right? Unless you're focused and you're diligent on your preparation and you're focused on not only about who we're playing, but more about like what we're about. Like, let's get Kutztown better. Like, what do we need to do to win, regardless of who's out on the field? And that's established in practice. I guess Iverson wouldn't like that answer.
To that point, though, over your career as a coach and as a head coach, do you feel like your concept of what makes up success has changed? Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to win a championship. But as far as at the end of the day, what you consider successful, do you think it's different now than it was when you started?
No, I don't. No. No, I kind of believe in this, in a lot of the same things we talked about here today. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that everywhere I've been as a head coach, you know, because I control how it's going to be, how it's going to be run. Again, it's just like, if you want to win, you got to prepare, right? And you've got to practice hard, and you've got to let your coaches coach. You can't be a micromanager on top of these guys. These guys have got to have a comfort and a drive and a want to be here. Like, when they wake up in the morning, they got to be excited to come into work, right? Because I'm going to allow them to do what they need to do to get their kids better, right? So I think that's important. I think you surround yourself with good people, right? Good things are going to happen. At the college level, we're fortunate to where we can recruit. We can go out and recruit our guys that are going to be difference makers. Like, so there's a piece to that as well. That's a benefit. At this level, like, you can go out and pick your guys that you feel can help your team, and they're going to be great in the locker room. You don't always get all of them, right? You never get them all. Sometimes that part of the recruiting part of it hasn't changed for me. I mean, the one thing that's changed is the cost of the school. But Matt, we have 8.5 scholarships. Like, we're one of the most underfunded in the country, right? You're allowed 36. Like, we're playing the semifinals against Colorado School of Mines. It's got 36 full scholarships. And we've got like 8.5, 9.
Right.
Right. So it's apples and oranges, right? So it's difficult. But at the same time, you can't use that as a crutch, right? You can't, that's why we lost, because we didn't have enough scholarship. No, we lost if you turn the ball over. We didn't tackle good enough. And we should have done a better job in our protection, right? And we could have been better in the kicking game. I mean, and to me, it's just surround yourself with good people, make the best of your opportunities, like same things we talk about to our kids, right? And you're going to have obstacles, be it financial, be it facility, be it chemistry, maybe getting the kids on the right path at times, some things that you can fix and some things that you're not going to be able to fix. But no one's allowed to complain about it, except for me. and everyone's got to be on the same page. Everyone pulling the rope the same direction and working hard and have fun. If you can't have fun, you're not going to win. You're not going to win. You got to have fun.
Jim Clements, this was great. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Kutztown University head football coach Jim Clements for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. We would really appreciate it. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores, fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at Ring.com.